Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Thursday, March 17th, 2022. Coming up this hour.
The House nears legislation to remove Russia's most favored nation trade status.
The bond and stock markets react differently to the Fed's interest rate liftoff.
The Bank of England set to raise rates this morning.
And stocks in Asia surge for a second straight day.
New York expands workplace harassment protection for all public employees. Plus, preparations continue for today's St. Patrick's Day parade in Manhattan. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. Easy win for the Knicks. Nets lost at the buzzer. Rutgers in the NCAAs lost in double overtime.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York. Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 106.1 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
And good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and futures are little changed this morning. We are coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures, again, little change, down 3 points. Dow futures also little change, and NASDAQ futures down about 15. The 10-year Treasury is up 15 30 seconds, the yield 2.13%, and the yield on the two-year at 1.92%, and the euro 1.1051 against the dollar. Nathan.
All right, Karen, we begin this morning with the latest developments on the war. A group of seven foreign ministers meet virtually today to discuss the crisis, while Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky addresses the lower house of the German parliament. This comes as Russian strikes continue on infrastructure sites in Ukraine. The Ukrainian military says a Russian plane bombed a theater where hundreds were sheltering. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
This adding to the concern about Russia purposely bombing civilians. The Maxar satellite firm collected images showing the word children in writing in white letters in front of and behind the theater. Meanwhile, President Joe Biden has promised new munitions to Ukraine.
We have identified and are helping Ukraine acquire additional longer-range anti-aircraft systems.
Along with shoulder rockets, Stinger and Javelin launchers, 20 million rounds of ammo, and 100 diving Switchblade drones. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Ed, thank you. In all, President Biden has offered $800 million worth of new weaponry to Ukraine. He also branded Russian President Vladimir Putin a war criminal. Later today, House lawmakers are set to revoke normal trade relations with Russia. Amy Morris has the latest from our Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
Removing Russia's most favored nation trade status allows the U.S. to impose higher tariffs on Russian goods. Sources tell Bloomberg News it also expands the Magnitsky Act, opening up the possibility of more sanctions on Russian officials for human rights violations. It would take Congress and the president together to reestablish any trade relationship with Russia. House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer says the vote will come later today, putting Russia in the same category as Cuba and North Korea. In Washington, I'm Amy Morris, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Okay, Amy, thank you. Meantime, in a chilling thread, Vladimir Putin is warning he will cleanse Russia of traitors.
But any people, and even more so the Russian people, will always be able to distinguish true patriots from scum and traitors and simply spit them out like a fly that accidentally flew into the mouth. Spit them out. I am convinced that such a natural and necessary cleansing of society will only strengthen our country.
Putin is accusing the West of wanting to destroy Russia. The finance ministry in Moscow says a $117 million interest payment that's due on $2 bonds has been made to Citibank in London. This comes amid mounting speculation that Russia's headed for a default.
Well, Nathan, another major story we're watching this morning is the continued reaction to the Fed's liftoff of interest rates. And Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with the latest. John, good morning.
Karen, stock and bond investors had completely different reactions to the Fed's quarter point rate increase. Stocks rallied, bonds sold off. The 5-10-year Treasury yield curve inverted for the first time since early 2020. That's a recessionary signal. At Guggenheim Partners, Chief Investment Officer Scott Minard isn't all that impressed with how the Fed is doing its job trying to tackle inflation.
I think that the Fed has largely abandoned monetary orthodoxy. It's trying to be too cute in how it's managing this.
Guggenheim's Scott Minard says they're in an inflation panic. The central bank also published forecasts from the authority's various officials, the so-called dot plot, that indicated a steeper hiking path than before. Live in New York, I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. Interest rates are also in focus in Europe. Let's get the very latest on that live with Bloomberg's Ewan Potts. Good morning, Ewan.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. The Bank of England was the first major central bank to tighten policy after the pandemic. And today, committee members look all but certain to hike rates for a third successive time. If they do, that would take the UK benchmark back to its pre-COVID level as the bank battles soaring inflation. That decision at 8 a.m. Eastern Time. Live in London, I'm Ewan Potts, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Ewan, thank you. Turning to the market, stocks in Asia jumped once again on a surge in Chinese technology shares. We get the recap from Bloomberg's Juliet Sally in Singapore. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. China's effort to stabilize markets saw the Hang Seng Index post its best two-day gain since 1998. The Hang Seng Tech Index added to Wednesday's dizzying 22% gain. However, the index is still down more than 50% from its February 2021 peak, owing to a year-long crackdown on the sector. The lift in Hong Kong and Chinese equities saw the MSCI Asia-Pacific Index rise over 3%. And the yen hovered near a six-year low, boosting the Nikkei 225 by 3.5%. That was its best two-day gain since April 2020. In Singapore, Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Juliet, thank you. Now, despite the recent pullback, one Wall Street firm says oil prices are heading a lot higher. Let's get more on that live from Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Nathan. Morgan Stanley is raising its Brent oil price forecast for the third quarter from $100 to $120 a barrel. Analysts there are citing tighter supply-demand balances worldwide. Morgan Stanley says the U.S. import ban and self-sanctioning in Europe, those mean Russian crude production would drop by 1 million barrels a day, which would be visible from April onwards. Analysts are raising their estimate for 2023 from $95 to $100 a barrel. Live in New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Okay, Renita, thanks. And checking oil now, West Texas Intermediate's at $98.59 a barrel. That's a gain of 3.75% on the session. Brent is at $101.59. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines and a check of sports. This is Bloomberg. It's now 5:07 on Wall Street. Take some time this morning. Foggy out, 45 degrees in Central Park. And Michael Barr is here with more on what's going on in New York and around the world on this St. Patrick's Day. Top of the morning, Michael.
Top of the morning to you, Nathan. St. Patrick's Day celebrations in New York City and across the country are back after a two-year hiatus. New York's parade, the nation's largest and oldest, will go up Fifth Avenue starting around 11 a.m. New York Mayor Eric Adams says today you can call him O. Adams.
Presents it in the spirit of the Irish Americans who played a major role in this city, building the Brooklyn Bridge, our MTA system, law enforcement. You look at the success of New York, you see the Irish contribution to it, and you should be proud to be Irish today and proud to be New Yorkers and proud to be Americans.
Mayor Adams says in 2020, the parade was canceled as the virus hit the U.S. White House medical advisor Dr. Anthony Fauci says Americans need to be ready to respond to another potential COVID surge if one occurs. Dr. Fauci says older individuals may need another vaccine booster.
I don't think there's any doubt that sooner or later, particularly among the elderly who have less of a robust immune response than a normal younger population, that sooner or later they will need a boost of a fourth shot.
Dr. Fauci says as more than 1,000 people a day are still dying of COVID in the U.S. It looks like the pandemic has led to the closing of the 9/11 Tribute Museum in Lower Manhattan. According to the Wall Street Journal, museum officials say it will likely close permanently after running up too much debt. The Tribute Museum, with a staff of about 10, was designed to serve the survivor community, while the nearby better-known National September 11th Memorial Museum honors those lost in the attack. New York has expanded workplace harassment protection for all public employees and has banned the release of anyone's employment records in retaliation for speaking up about alleged abuse. New York Governor Kathy Hochul signed the new laws yesterday. Actor Jussie Smollett has been released from jail in Chicago after an appeals court agreed with his lawyers that he should be free pending the appeal of his conviction for lying to police about a racist and homophobic attack. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barb. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thank you, Michael. Almost 5:10 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Good morning, John Stanshaw.
All right, good morning, Nathan. The NCAA tournament begins in earnest today. 16 games, 16 more tomorrow. But late last night in Dayton, Ohio, Notre Dame coach Mike Gray suggested there will not be a game in the tourney better than the one his team had just won in the first four. Notre Dame 89, Rutgers 87, double overtime. Both teams shot over 50%. Paul Atkinson won it with a putback with 1 second left. It came just after midnight, so technically the Irish won the game on St. Patrick's Day. Iona lost its first round NIT game at Florida, 79-74. Easy one for the Knicks at the Garden, 128-98 over a Portland team that started three guys who weren't even drafted. R.J. Barrett scored 31. Nets and Mavs in Brooklyn. Dallas had the ball, trailing by one.
Doncic, he's on that left side as he crosses the front court with five. Up to the top with three. Doncic with two. Gives it up to Dinwiddie for three in the win, and he buries it! The former net comes back, and Spencer Dinwiddie on a game-winning three. The Mavericks have defeated the Nets 113-111.
ESPN had the call. Luka Doncic, 31 points for Dallas. Devils lost at Calgary 6-3. The Rangers swung a trade with Florida, the team with the best record in the East. They sent a draft pick to the Panthers for Frank Vetrano. He gets traded the day after he scored the tying and winning goals for the Panthers. Freddie Freeman was a fixture at first base for the Atlanta Braves, big part in winning the World Series last fall, but now he's a Dodger, signed for 6 years, $162 million. And the Dodgers now have four MVPs on their roster, with Freeman joining Clayton Kershaw, Cody Bellinger, and Mookie Betts. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan.
Okay, John, thanks. Right now, S&P futures are moving lower, down almost 8 points. Dow futures down 37. NASDAQ futures are lower by 34 points. The 10-year Treasury is up 16 30 seconds. The yield on the 10-year note, 2.12%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 1130 weather. Fog this morning. Showers likely this afternoon. Mid-50s for highs. Will be partly to mostly sunny with a high near 70 tomorrow. Occasional rain. Low 60s for Saturday. Right now, 45 in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. This update brought to you by SEI. Today's competitive marketplace requires asset managers to become more operationally adept. See how you can transform your business with SEI's global platform at seic.com/IMS. U.S. stock index futures are now lower and European shares are little changed as traders digest the Federal Reserve's view that a robust U.S. economy can weather the campaign against high inflation. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down about 6 points. Dow futures down 10. NASDAQ futures down 30. The DAX in Germany's down 0.33%. The 10-year Treasury up 15 30 seconds. Yield 2.12%. The yield on the 2-year 1.93%. NYMEX crude oil is up 4.1%, up $3.84 at $98.88 a barrel. COMEX gold up 1.4%, up $27.30 at $19.37 an ounce. The euro 1.1046 against the dollar, British pound 1.3179, and the yen at 118.69. Bitcoin this morning moving lower, down more than 1% at $40,830. And today we are watching for the weekly report on initial jobless claims out at 8:30 Wall Street time, along with housing starts and building permits. Industrial production's out at 9:15, and FedEx is among companies scheduled to report earnings today. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. Russian artillery destroyed a school and a community center in a city near Kharkiv today. That's according to a Ukrainian official. It comes a day after an airstrike ripped apart a theater where hundreds of people had been taking shelter in the besieged city of Mariupol. New data released by the Census Bureau shows the U.S. grew wealthier, better educated, and poverty declined during the second half of the last decade. Get ready for a lot of lost productivity at work with St. Patrick's Day and today's start of the NCAA college basketball tournament. In the play-in games yesterday, Wright State earned its first men's tournament victory. Notre Dame needed double overtime to beat Rutgers to advance. And In the NBA, the Knicks won, the Nets and Wizards lost, Celtics beat the Warriors. In the NHL, the Devils and Bruins lost. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air, and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
What a convergence. Okay, Michael, thank you. It is now 5:20 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak as we continue monitoring developments both militarily and diplomatically in the war in Ukraine. We're joined from our Bloomberg 99.1 studios in Washington, D.C., by our Bloomberg government congressional reporter, Jack Fitzpatrick. Jack, good morning. Thanks for being with us. We've been monitoring President Zelensky of Ukraine as he addresses the lower house of Germany's parliament this morning. Of course, he spoke virtually to the U.S. Congress yesterday. Given the reaction from lawmakers and the president, is it safe to say that the Ukrainian president's words left an impression with lawmakers in the nation's capital?
Yes, definitely. He is admired on a bipartisan basis. The speech was well received. He, on a, I guess, a more substantive, concrete note, he's not going to get everything he asked for. He really was shooting for the moon on some of his requests. Obviously, the request for a no-fly zone over Ukraine was not received particularly well. There was a lot of polite, not vociferous pushback, but you heard from members in both parties that that really is not an option that's being considered. And the request for fighter jets also is not something that the administration currently is going for. What the president announced yesterday in terms of military aid to Ukraine is much more sort of lightweight, handheld, 100 smaller drones, javelins, Stinger, anti-aircraft, and helmets and body armor and that kind of thing. So it was very well received, but nothing really changed that much in terms of where Congress and the White House draws a line in terms of what they're willing to provide to Ukraine.
Well, let's talk a little bit, Jack, about what the president is offering here. $800 million in new military aid for Ukraine. What kind of impact could that have on the battles going forward? And is there a possibility that the president could be leaving open here for further aid down the road?
Yes. One, it is significant. $800 million, by comparison, recently in a more normal year, the U.S. might give something like $500 million or $600 million to Ukraine in military aid. So this one batch is a very significant amount of money for a country that has a defense budget that has peaked around $6 billion in recent years. So these are, again, anti-aircraft weapons, anti-tank weapons, 100 drones that are a bit more short-range weapons, not exactly patrolling the skies, but supposed to be effective for groups that are pinned down by enemy fire, grenade launchers, 5,000 rifles, that kind of thing. But there is a lot of talk in Congress about the likelihood that another spending bill will be needed. They're waiting to see exactly what the defense needs are, but there are already some humanitarian needs. The World Food Program at the UN, and actually the Justice Department measure targeting Russian oligarchs, according to Lindsey Graham, who's a key member on the subcommittee funding these kinds of things, said they already need more money. So there's already a conversation about providing more to Ukraine. Over the next few weeks, I think lawmakers are waiting to see exactly what is needed, but it seems that more eventually will be coming.
And in our last minute here, Jack, we're also expecting today that the House is going to vote to revoke Russia's normal trade status. Is this something we're expecting to get bipartisan support?
Yes, actually, the way this is set up by House leadership is sort of a speedy process that allows them to skip procedural steps if they can get at least two-thirds of a vote in the House, and that's how they've set it up. So clearly, House Democratic leaders are expecting very significant bipartisan support, the kind that would help this probably sail through the House and Senate, where this has been talked about in a bipartisan way for a little while now. So the expectation is there's going to be a lot of bipartisan support, and that's the kind of thing that could become law.
All right, and we're going to be monitoring that vote as it comes down later on today. Bloomberg government congressional reporter Jack Fitzpatrick, thanks for being with us from our 99.1 studios in the nation's capital. We'll be checking back with you again later in this program as Bloomberg Daybreak continues. Looking ahead to the market open, slight losses for futures contracts. We're watching the S&P futures go down by about 6 points now. Dow futures are lower by 29 points. SAR NASDAQ futures actually lower by 29, and the 10-year Treasury is up 16.30 seconds with a yield 2.12%. Just ahead, a divergent market reaction to the Fed's decision and why oil prices could go higher from here. Your top stories of the morning just ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 11:30 weather. Areas of fog this morning. Showers likely this afternoon with highs in the mid-50s. Will be partly to mostly sunny with a high near 70 tomorrow. Low 60s, occasional rain on Saturday. Right now, 45 and fog.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 99.1 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 4 hours away from the open of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Ukrainian officials are demanding a ceasefire as Russian strikes on cities and infrastructure continue. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky speaks to Germany's Bundestag today after addressing U.S. lawmakers yesterday. Afterwards, President Joe Biden announced the U.S. is offering $800 million worth of new weaponry to Ukraine, including armed drones.
The American people will be steadfast in our support of the people of Ukraine in the face of Putin's immoral, unethical attacks on civilian populations. We are united in our abhorrence of Putin's depraved onslaught, and we're going to continue to have their backs as they fight for their freedom, their democracy, their very survival.
President Biden called Russian President Vladimir Putin a war criminal in his remarks. On Capitol Hill, the House is voting today to revoke Russia's most favored nation trade status.
Well, meantime, Karen, Russia announced it made a $117 million interest payment due on $2 bonds to Citibank in London, but didn't comment on if it was credited. If Russia fails to honor coupons on the two notes, it could renege on its obligations to foreign creditors for the first time since 1918.
Well, turning to markets, Nathan, stock and bond investors are having very different reaction to yesterday's quarter point rate hike from the Fed. And Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with the details. John.
Karen, while stocks rallied, bonds sold off. Five-year Treasury yields surged above 10-year yields. That's an inversion that could signal recession ahead. The Fed officials' forecast, the so-called dot plot, indicated a steeper path of interest rates than before, leading some to suggest the central bank is in an inflation panic. A swaps market's now betting 7 or 8 hikes for this year, including the one just announced. In New York, I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Radio.
All right, John, thanks. And despite the recent pullback, one Wall Street firm says oil prices are heading higher. With the latest live, here's Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Nathan. Morgan Stanley is raising its Brent oil price forecast for the third quarter from $100 to $120 a barrel. Analysts there cite tighter supply-demand balances worldwide. Morgan Stanley says the U.S. import ban and self-sanctioning in Europe mean Russian crude production will drop by 1 million barrels a day, which will be visible from April onwards. Analysts raised their 2023 estimate from $95 to $100 a barrel. Live in New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Renita, thank you. And futures this morning are lower. S&P futures down 6 points, Dow futures down 32, so are NASDAQ futures. And straight ahead, your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports, and this is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Karen. It's 5:33 on Wall Street, 45 degrees in Central Park, and very foggy on the river crossings this morning. Michael Barr has more on what's going on in New York and around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. New York St. Patrick's Day Parade is back in Manhattan. It was canceled in 2020 because of the pandemic. Last year was a scaled-down version, but this year, Fifth Avenue will be packed with marches. New York Mayor Eric Adams.
It means so much to all of us to see this parade return. When it's paused, we knew we will be back.
Mayor Adams says the parade will begin at 11 a.m. New York Governor Kathy Hochul signed legislation expanding the state's anti-retaliation protections for people filing discrimination and sexual harassment claims. The law, effective immediately, makes the public release of an employee's personnel records grounds for a retaliation claim. There are new details about that horrific head-on highway crash in West Texas. 9 people were killed, including 6 New Mexico college students and their golf coach returning from a tournament. 2 other students are in the hospital. The driver of the other vehicle and a 13-year-old passenger were also killed. Eric Weiss with the NTSB says the crash was a, quote, high-energy event.
It was a 75-mile-an-hour speed limit. So that's the information we have on speed. We don't have the exact speed of the vehicles. Hopefully our investigators will try to determine that.
Eric Weiss with the NTSB. It's believed the pickup swerved into the van carrying the golf team. 2 British citizens who had been jailed in Iran for more than 5 years have returned to Britain after the UK settled a decades-old debt to Iran. A 3rd detainee was furloughed as part of the same deal. The breakthrough was reached as world leaders tried to negotiate the return of both Iran and the U.S. to an international agreement designed to limit Tehran's nuclear enrichment program. Actor Jussie Smollett was released from a Chicago jail. An appeals court says he can be free while he appeals his conviction for lying about being the victim of a racist and homophobic attack. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Sports Update with John Stashar.
Thanks, Nathan. Knicks back from a 7-game road trip where they did better than expected with 3 wins. They had no trouble at the Garden with Portland, 128-98. R.J. Barrett scored 31, much closer at the Barclays Center where Spencer Dinwiddie used to play. His career flourished with the Nets, and he came back, hit a game-winning 3 at the buzzer to give Dallas a 113-111 victory. Devils lost at Calgary 6-3. Rangers made a trade with the deadline approaching to send a draft pick to Florida for veteran forward Frank Vetrano. NCAA tournament, what a game. At the first 4 in Dayton, Ohio, went double overtime. Paul Atkinson, transfer from Yale, put back with 1 second left, giving Notre Dame an 89-87 win over Rutgers. Atkinson scored 26 points. Ron Harper Jr. had tied the game for the Scarlet Knights with a deep 3. Iona's season ended with an NIT loss at Florida. NFL free agency coinciding with the recent end of the baseball lockout. So signings in both sports. Von Miller to the Buffalo Bills. Freddie Freeman to the Dodgers. Chris Bryant to the Colorado Rockies. Yankees made the trade with the Twins, re-signed Anthony Rizzo. They steered clear of the really high-priced guys, but owner Hal Steinbrenner has high hopes for the upcoming season.
This is a championship-caliber team. You know, I think the trade that Cash made was a great trade. You know, we're going to miss the guys that moved on, but I think we addressed one or two of the needs that we had. But look, this team's got a lot of experience. It's a veteran team. They got a lot of heart. And I think we're going to see great things this year.
Steinbrenner said they will soon get to work on a new contract for Aaron Judge. John Stashow with Bloomberg Sports.
Thank you, John. It's 5:37 on Wall Street. Time for the Tri-State Business Report with Bloomberg's Scott Carr.
IBM says it'll consolidate its New York City offices into one space at 1 Madison Avenue. New York Business Journal reports the tech giant signed a 16-year lease for 328,000 square feet at the tower. IBM is headquartered north of the city in Armonk. 9 IBM offices will be merged in 2024. The Planning Commission in the small Hartford suburb of Tolland, Connecticut, has given the go-ahead for retail cannabis establishments in most of that town's commercial zones with some restrictions. Under new rules, Hartford Business reports a cannabis retailer or medical marijuana dispensary would be allowed in nearly every commercial zone except one small area near Route 195. The New Jersey Transit Board of Directors has taken another step in the transition to a zero-emissions bus fleet with the awarding of a $4 million contract to AECOM to design the infrastructure required for a limited deployment of electric buses and conduct a survey of current conditions at all 16 NJ Transit bus garages statewide. That's the Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Scott Carr.
Thank you, Scott. It's 5:38 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Steve Potusk, and on 1010 Winds in New York, we're talking about Saks Fifth Avenue and Kohl's possibly one day being under the same ownership umbrella.
I'm Courtney Dunahoe on WHAS in Louisville. Surging used car prices are encouraging owners to chase profits.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WBBM in Chicago, I'm reporting that bird flu is becoming a problem again in the U.S., pushing up egg prices just ahead of Easter.
I'm Caroline Hepcorn, Bloomberg DAB, digital radio in London. We're reporting on the Bank of England rate decision as the war in Ukraine gives energy prices another jolt upwards.
I'm Scott Carr on WDCH in Washington. I'm reporting on supply chain services loosening up in Virginia.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. It's 5:39 on Wall Street.
The following is an editorial from Bloomberg Opinion.
What can be done to mitigate the short-term inflationary pressure from mounting energy costs? The challenge is to moderate the upward pressure on short-term prices without making fossil fuels more attractive in the long term. Ideally, planned supplies would be delivered sooner, not persistently raised. The Strategic Petroleum Reserve can help. On March 1st, the U.S. announced it would release 30 million barrels of crude from its stock of 580 million. Releasing stocks into the economy alleviates the short-term disruption. But this can and should be combined with so-called exchange agreements, advance commitments to restock later, which would take supplies off the market and reassure producers that until the reserves are replenished, there'll be sufficient demand to justify a temporary increase in output. Such arrangements help to stabilize both prices and production. The stresses caused by the Russia sanctions will likely be long-lasting and tough to manage. This more ambitious use of the petroleum reserve could make a difference. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Opinion editorial board. I'm David Shipley. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPI and Go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
Listen for Bloomberg Opinion editorials every weekday at this time. Terminal customers can read more at OPIN Go. Futures moving lower with S&P futures now down 10 points. Dow futures down 55. NASDAQ futures lower by 40 points. The 10-year Treasury yield 2.12%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 1130 weather, some fog this morning, showers likely this afternoon, mid-50s for highs, partly to mostly sunny tomorrow with a high near 70, low 60s, occasional rain for Saturday. Right now, fog and 45 degrees in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and stocks in Europe have been fluctuating. They're higher again. U.S. stock index futures are lower. Traders are digesting the Federal Reserve's view that a robust U.S. economy can weather the campaign against high inflation. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 12 points this morning. Dow futures down 71. NASDAQ futures down 45. The DAX in Germany is down a third of a percent. 10-year Treasury up 18/32, yield 2.11%. Yield on the two-year, 1.91%. NYMEX crude oil is up 4.33%, up $4.13 at $99.20 a barrel. COMEX gold up 1.8%, up $33.90 at $19.43.40 an ounce. The euro, 1.1051 against the dollar. British pound, 1.3181, and the yen's at 118.62. And Bitcoin this morning lower, down 1.1% at $40,800. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, thank you very much. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky addressed German lawmakers a day after an impassioned address to U.S. Congress about Russia's invasion in Ukraine. Meanwhile, China's foreign ministry endorsed supportive remarks by its envoy to Ukraine, in which Beijing delivered some of its most supportive comments yet toward the war-torn country. Today is the start in earnest of the NCAA college basketball tournament. In the play-in games yesterday, Wright State has earned its first men's tournament victory, and Notre Dame needed double overtime against Rutgers to advance. In the NBA, the Knicks won, the Nets and Wizards lost, the Celtics beat the Warriors. In the NHL, the Devils and Bruins lost. Global news, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts sales to more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Michael, thanks. It's 5:49 on Wall Street now, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak, and Drew Mattis is with us now, Chief Market Strategist at MetLife Investment Management, as we try to get some more reaction now to a Federal Reserve now really in inflation fighting mode. Drew, good to have you with us this morning. So the market got the 0.25% move that it was expecting, and it looks like just about every meeting is live from here on out for the rest of the year. What do you make of the hawkish turn from the central bank?
Well, you know, I think we have to put it in perspective, which is, you know, they're saying they're going to do this, but if you look at history and the dot plot, they often don't actually follow through on what they say they're hoping to achieve. And I think this might be a case where they're using the dot plot as a policy tool rather than actually expecting to go through and do 6 rate hikes this year.
So then what do you think the Fed is going to do, Drew?
Well, I think they're going to do fewer. I think they're going to do QT earlier, which I think they already hinted at in the meeting yesterday. He basically said, you know, it's about time to be reducing the balance sheet. So he's putting that on par with rate hikes, and I think that's probably appropriate. I think the main game here, though, is to convince the world that we're serious about fighting inflation when actually the inflation you're trying to fight is not one that's going to be solved by rate hikes.
So how do you think the Fed is going to be able to tackle this kind of inflation? What do you think the driving force is going to be? Is the Fed going to be able to pull off a soft landing?
Well, we'll see. I mean, if they follow through with 6 rate hikes, I think it's going to be a bumpier and rockier road. I don't see how they do that with the unemployment rate forecast that they're projecting. I think their growth forecast looks a little robust if they're actually follow through with what they're saying. At the same time, I think the inflation forecast, that looks more reasonable to me. But it's probably going to happen if supply chains begin to improve and we see some, you know, as we've already seen, right, energy prices are not moving the way they were. So, you know, these things are done in advance. And even from the time they completed the SCP projections to the time they actually put them out and told us what they all were, energy prices pretty much did a U-turn.
So then do you think the dot plot is sort of managing market expectations then? What do you think is going to move the Fed when it comes to actual rate hikes for the rest of this year?
Well, I guess I'd flip the every meeting is live idea, right? If every meeting's live, that means every meeting may not be in play. I think for now, though, the main message the Fed was trying to get across was we're going to take rates into restrictive territory, which they've penciled in for 2023, in order to get inflation under control. Right? They don't really care why inflation comes down; they just want it to come down. And I think they and most other economists on Wall Street and myself are all looking for inflation to moderate a bit in the second half of this year. Simply because of the way inflation behaved last year. And I think that's what they're counting on in order to kind of signal to the markets that, hey, you know what, maybe all these rate hikes aren't necessary. They penciled them in at the beginning of the year when everyone was worried about inflation. When people become less worried about inflation, they can always pull some back.
What do you make of the divergent market reaction we saw after the news conference? The stock rally, the bond sell-off. Who do you think is getting it right in the market?
It could be that the market kind of sees it my way, which is, you know, maybe they'll go ahead and do this. If they go ahead and do this, the bond market's telling you that could be a problem. And the equity market's saying, well, you know what, by the time it actually becomes a problem, they'll stop. And so you kind of get the best of both worlds. You keep the bond market. I mean, look, they're hiking rates because they don't want the 10-year yield moving up by even more than it would, if inflation's going to be there, right? They're also keeping an eye on that inversion, right? And there's no way, in my opinion, that, you know, if you're the Fed and you're looking at things and you're having to decide between hiking rates and not hiking rates, and if you hike rates, the curve inverts, that you go ahead and do that. I'm not really sure, you know, what you'd be hoping to achieve policy-wise by forcing that issue. Mm-hmm. And I think if they do force that issue, what you're going to see is the equity market behave very differently.
Thanks for this, Drew. Good having you on with us. Drew Mattis, Chief Market Strategist at MetLife Investment Management. Karen.
Well, Nathan, it is coming up to 5:54 on Wall Street. Time for a legal story we're watching this morning, brought to you by American Arbitration Association. Business disputes are inevitable. Resolve faster with the American Arbitration Association, the global leader in alternative dispute resolution for over 90 years. More at ADR.org. Well, since Russia invaded Ukraine, more than 3 million people have fled Ukraine to neighboring countries like Poland, Hungary, Romania, and Slovakia. The EU is allowing Ukrainian nationals to travel visa-free in Europe, and they can choose the EU country they would like to stay in and apply for temporary protection there. But the United States has only admitted a few hundred Ukrainian refugees, and it is so difficult to get into the U.S. that some Ukrainians are showing up at the Mexico border to try to get asylum. For more, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to Leon Fresco, a partner at Holland & Knight and a former immigration official in the Obama administration.
Leon, tell us about the calls you've been getting trying to arrange for Ukrainians to come to the U.S.
Plenty of people are seeking to come here on student visas now, on visitor visas, humanitarian parole applications. And it's just going to come down to whether the Biden administration provides guidance saying that that's okay to let people come here and stay during the duration of the crisis, essentially, knowing that hopefully some large segment of those individuals would go back if the war were to subside, or are they going to take a more doctrinal, dogmatic approach and say, look, you can't come on a visitor visa if you're from Ukraine because we have no evidence you're going to come back. We can't give you a student visa if you're from Ukraine because we have no evidence you're going to come back, et cetera. The more of those pathways that they cut off, the harder it's going to be. And what you'll see, and you're starting to see smatterings of this, is actually Ukrainians appearing on the southern border and just applying for asylum on the southern border. And if that's the only way you're going to let Ukrainians in, that's the way that Ukrainians are going to use if they have an American family member that's arranging this for them.
Let's say someone calls you up and says, my family's in Ukraine now, or went from Ukraine to Poland. I want to get them into this country. Besides flying to Mexico, what else can you do?
Well, the most compelling legal option in terms of what you would do doctrinally is something called humanitarian parole. And you would ask them to put together a package that you would assist them making with their information and why they can't stay where they are, and why, as a humanitarian nature, the United States should give them a one-year parole to sort of weather the storm here, and then after that 1 year, they can leave. And showing that they have sufficient family ties here, that they have an economic sponsor here who can take care of them while they're here, which would usually be some very close family member with a pretty decent income, and you would let the chips fall where they may. We're at the beginning stages of this process. USCIS endeavors to give decisions in 90 days on these parole applications. So we'll know in a few weeks whether USCIS is treating these claims compassionately or not. And quite frankly, the state of affairs may be completely different in the next few weeks than it is right now. So we don't know. A lot of this is going to be wait and see.
And that's Leon Fresco, a partner at Holland & Knight, speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso. Catch more of that interview, plus analysis of the latest legal news, by listening to the Bloomberg Law Show at 10 p.m. Eastern Time or subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast. And attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues on a day when futures are trading lower. And this is Bloomberg.